Okay. Good morning. My name is Alison Saul, and I work for Microsoft in Redmond in the Bing team. And this is part of the tracks related to security during this event, and you will be able to download the content later. And there are links for where you can download this content. A lot of people ask me, because I will have to go broad during this presentation and I cannot go deep. And they ask me, if I had to start learning about big data and machine learning, which books I would recommend, so you can get the slides later. And those are the books that I tell people to start, and then they can go further. And the source code that I will show, you can get from GitHub. And it's there right now. The source code is already there. And if you have any questions, I created an account just for TechEd that you can send me email later, okay? So these slides also should be on my website and on TechEd later for you to get. Please submit your technical evaluations. This presentation is a little different from the other presentations during the event. I'm not exactly in a product team that will sell you today a product or service. So please give us feedback if the content is something that you want more on TechEd. And please make sure you separate the content from my delivery, because I'm a developer and developers are usually not exactly the best people to present. This is not only my work, it's the work of a lot of people. So thanks to everybody in Redmond and in other places that gave us content and feedback and allowed us to show this to you here today. I have a background in physics. I really was a bachelor in physics before I started working with computer science. And this is good, because in these 15 years at Microsoft, I worked in a lot of projects, different projects, client server. And my team right now is in the applications and services group. It is responsible for the information platform. And I work exactly in the team that is in charge of security, privacy, accessibility, and the audit of all the features, mainly for Bing and MSN. So what we will share with you today is how we use big data and machine learning to protect those services. And basically, this will be done through two stories. The first part is how we have been able to use machine learning to help us protect Bing and other online services. This is a happy story. Basically, we have done that. It is something that we'll share with you and hope you can use some of this for your own services. The second part is how we are still using machine learning to improve our protection for Bing and the other services. The second part, we will go deeper in some areas that are even research areas today. It is still something that is not finished. It is to be continued. So let's go quickly over the first story, because it is the more complete one and the one that really you can take away something and hopefully help with your own online service. In a generic way, an online service is basically a front end. For example, in our services for Bing and MSN, we have a few thousand machines on the front end that are receiving requests from people, and they log some information about those requests and send the request to back-end services. The back-end services for Bing, for example, are the services that answer your queries. For MSN, they present news and information about other people. So the back-end services, they get a lot of content from what we call syndicated content. Social graph, we have partnerships with Facebook and Twitter, so we get information from those partners. Cat pictures, because people love to post cat pictures. And finally, we only make money because we have a huge database of ads. So there are billions of lines in the string of ads where people tell us that, hey, I want to display an ad during the Halloween date, for example. Show this ad everywhere you can. Or they tell us, if someone searches for car, I want to pay 10 cents if you show my ad. And then there is a bidding process, and you can learn more about it elsewhere. Now, given this generic online service, what is exactly that we call these requests? Because we want to use this big data from the requests and the logs to learn more about our web service and protect it. First, remember that a service like Bing, that may be similar or not to your own service, it has, in the back end, we have thousands of developers, each team working on a different thing. There is a team that is working, for example, on the search for videos. If you go there, you click soccer, you enter soccer and click search, there is an entire team that is in charge of how you go through a database of videos and present you the videos that are relevant. There is another team that is in charge of getting you information about the weather. You don't even need to tell Bing where you are. We find by the IP address where you are, and we can try to give you information about the weather. Of course, it is not someone looking at the sky. There is a database of weather information coming from our partners. News. Here I have an example, a screen capture of a web page that's shown in the United States for news on a certain date. Side by side, you see the same web page if you go to Bing and ask for news in Spain. So you don't need to give a lot of information. By the context of your request, these back-end services know what to serve to you. Now, the problem is there are people trying to attack services. Nowadays, they estimate that the business for attacks on the internet, people trying to hijack web services, capture data about your accounts, it is a $500 billion business. If you compare this with other areas, it is a huge amount of money that is there, and some people are trying to make money out of this. And what is that they will use to make money out of this? They will be using vulnerabilities. Vulnerabilities that can be coming from bugs in your service or product, or that can be coming from the integration of your entire experience that brings up issues. And those will be exploited by the lone hacker, that is this guy that is an adolescent or a teenager, kind of smart and trying to do something. Those probably will not bring you a lot of damage. But the problem is when there are those hackers that will really take a network of computers, take control of this network, and then use this network to attack your service, or even worse, they will control your own servers. There were presentations here that you can look at the videos later about how they can take control of your servers and use them to go and attack others. Let me give you an example of how people exploit integration services in Bing and other similar services. A few months back, I was doing a test and I searched in Bing for Azure ML. Now, people know that Azure ML is the machine learning offering from Microsoft, but a few months back, that was not known. So I was curious, what will be shown as the most relevant page when I search for Azure ML in Bing? That is the page that was shown at that time. If you click on that page that Bing at that time was thinking it is the most relevant page for that keyword, you go to this page that is showing products that are basically key generators for Microsoft products for $7. So it is a page that is involved on cybercrime in what we call counterfeit activity. Somehow, these guys then managed to make Bing believe this is the most relevant page to show when you search for AzureML. This is just an example. This happens a lot with a lot of keywords. And you may be curious, how do they do this? Do they hack Bing? It is something that someone hacked the Bing index server and injected something? No, the thing is far simpler than what you think. This is an example of an integration issue. Bing, as many search engines, has several criteria for the relevance of a web page. The number of keywords that are present on that page, the number of links to that page from other pages that have good reputation. And one of the very important things that will increase the reputation of a web page is if people go there, search for that term, see the result, click, and don't come back quickly, because if they come back quickly, it means that they didn't like that page, then the reputation of that page goes up. If you try to do this alone, trying to go search for a page, for a term, and then look at a certain page and click on it, it will not influence Bing that much. If you are in control of 100,000 machines and you somehow automate them to do this, then it will eventually influence where that page will be shown. And that is what hackers are doing. They are doing this for ads, they are doing this for several things. And the key thing is, how is that they are hacking those machines? Unhappily, not people in this audience, but a lot of people believe that Bill Gates is really giving money to them if they click on links from email. So they receive a message, and it's like, oh, Bill Gates will give me money if I click here or send something. Most of those messages, indeed, are trying to get information from those people to steal their identity. But a lot of these messages are really trying to take over their machines. This is one of the common attacks, and you may think, well, I'll never fall for this. I happen to have lived in England, and I was really someday waiting for some message from the tax return service in England, and if I was not really paying attention, look at this message. It really looks like a legitimate message from the Her Majesty Royal Tax Return, and the only thing is that luckily I paid attention, because you see that the link that is there is trying very hard to look like a link that is to the real site, but it is not. If you pay attention and if you parse in your mind a little bit this URL, you see that it is not hosted by the real place. Problem is, there is a vulnerability in some websites that allow the redirection. The URL is really sent to that website, but then the site redirects you to another site. So, for example, I can give you a website like that here that kind of looks like it's going to example.com, but redirects to the other example.net from the attacker. This is a vulnerability that your site may or not have. And there are several other vulnerabilities. If people capture those machines from you or from your relatives or from people on the internet, they will likely use those machines to attack accounts all over, attacking what we call the broad way or the deep way. And they will then use those accounts to send email to more people. Now, these people are sending millions of these messages And if just 1% of those people click and their machines are captured, at the end of the day, they have thousands of machines in their network. Then the problem is now they can have an army to attack somewhere. What they need to know is, where do they attack? They can just go and crawl websites just like we do, just like Bing, Google, other companies do. They can also crawl websites and find the endpoints that they can go and try to inject an attack. For example, suppose you have a URL like that one, bing.com, and it has a parameter that is the query parameter. If Bing was a site that was subject to what we call cross-site scripting attack, if you put on that query parameter something like a JavaScript, it will be reflected to the client, and that can be dangerous. The client may execute that. And if you encode this, you probably here in this audience understand HTML encoding, the URL that is finally the attack request is really an attack request that is very kind of cryptic. It's very hard for you to parse mentally that. There are several types of attacks that you can do. You can do cross-site scripting, you can do open redirects, you can do clickjacking. And then all that you need to know for a certain website is what? The attack surface. So there are, unhappily, on the internet, libraries that these hackers can download. And if they are given the URLs, these libraries will attack automatically for them. Now, how we can help ourselves and protect our web services having this knowledge? We can find our attack surface before the hackers. We can then attack ourselves and see if we have the vulnerability. And then we can fix that before the hackers exploit that vulnerability. How do I find my attack surface? When I showed you this generic website, web service, or online service diagram, I showed you that there are logs. What are those logs? Basically, we classify logs on two high-level classifications. One is the user's data, which is the requests that come from the customers, which is basically all user interactions, and then they request something. Or the operational data, what is happening in your servers as those requests are coming. The CPU is going up and down, the disk is going up and down, and so on and so forth. Now, if I get my requests, and here I'm talking only about the user's data, and I map those requests to something that only has the query parameter name, but not the query parameter value, I can eventually reduce that. And these are terms from a technology called map reduce that you can probably read more about later. And this will give me my attack surface. How is this done in practice? In practice, and I will drop a little bit out of the slide deck and show you the source code. And this is the source code that I told you it is available for you online. In practice, what happens is you need to get each line from your log file. You need then to extract from this line what we call the keys and values for map reduce. And you write this. Then in the reduce, we will, for example, just get each line again, get the key and value pairs, and for example, I will iterate through the keys and count those. Again, I will not explain that map reduce here. There are other references for you to do this. But let me show you an example. Suppose I have a log file like this. This is a standard log file from Azure that has the requests. And I know that there is a column here that tells me the request and the parameters that are sent to the website. I can use that code that I've showed to you, and you have a way to configure it and submit it to HD Insight. And then what I will get at the end is an output that tells me, hey, this is a request that was done 17 times to your server. This is another request that was done 2 times, and so on and so forth. So this is the input and the output of the code that I've showed you. Of course, this is a little bit different from what we have in Bing. In Bing, what happens is the output is really a huge spreadsheet, for example, that is like this. So in a certain day, this URL here was called 800 million times with different parameters. And then this other URL was called also some million times, and so on and so forth. So that is the output of the same map reduce. It is just that, of course, I'm really dealing with the Bing logs. This is a huge thing for us because we start to learn, for example, that uniquely there are 1 million different requests. We start then to summarize this data and we see, hey, these are the top URLs that are called. I'm showing some old data here because it is the only thing I can show. But the good thing is you start to see that there is a long tail of requests. 99.8% of the requests are done to our web services and website are done less than 1,000 times. 99.55, less than 100 times in a day. 67%, it is a unique request. So you start to see that a lot of people are probably playing with parameters and trying to attack us. You can do the same for our website and start to learn some things. And for example, we learned also that the top 10 URLs from our site are 89% of the traffic. The top 20 are 96%. So this gives you a lot of knowledge about your website from the logs that you start to use. You can use somehow to protect your site. You can do things like, well, if why are people sending requests that are so unique? I should probably not even send to my backend those requests that I know I don't really know the answer. Again, what you do with the information will be specific to your site. But it's very important to understand that what we do is, we do this, as I've showed you, typically on a day we can have from 10 billion to 100 billion requests. We map, we reduce, when we end up with something from 500 different to 1 million different combinations of URLs and parameters, and then we attack our own services. We have a service that attacks our own services and go and, for example, this is an example of a business result where someone was about to release a version of Bing Maps. We send to a certain URL a string that we know if the URL, the endpoint, is accepting cross-site scripting, a dialog will pop up. And we avoid that being released to the customers like you with a cross-site vulnerability. You can do the same for your website. The scripts that I've provided can give you the attack surface, and then all you have to do is to code a little bit more to attack your site. Be careful, because after you find your attack surface, you don't want to create a denial of service in your own online service by attacking it too hard. So you need to throttle this thing. You need to be very careful, because otherwise you attack it and you bring it down. The other thing that you can do is what we have shown to you. You can prioritize based on areas of importance. You have shown, I've shown to you that the top 20 URLs are 96% of the traffic. So we know what is very important to protect. Maybe there is something that will go down if it is bad, but maybe we don't need to scan, as we say, that area so frequently. And finally, this is not perfect. There is always a window of time between the last time you scan something and maybe a developer checking something that goes to the public before you can scan it. So if you do this, you have to have controls in place. There are still issues. For some special kinds of endpoints, you need to do something special. People know that REST APIs sometimes encode the parameters in a different way. So I didn't show this here. Attacking your own service requires sometimes some special credentials. You don't want to be attacking from the back end. You want to do this exactly like the customer will do. So it may require some configuration. You will have false positives, and you need to be careful. If you have 500,000 URLs that you are attacking, and your attacks will create 0.1% false positives, you will have 500 incidents to investigate every day. So you don't want to have false positives. Be very careful. And remember, all this is assuming that the data feeds that come from the back end are good, and sometimes they are not. So you still have a weak link there. In terms of the first scenario, I would like to close because we will go to something a little bit different. Any questions? Okay. You have the source code. You can try this by your own. And if you have questions, you know where to send it. Now, this all, the first 25 minutes, is something that we have done, you can do, and it is kind of standard technology. It just requires work. The next part is a little bit harder because it's something that, as we are uncovering, requires a lot of research. So let's go through it. And it is basically a very simple idea. A lot of people, including us, are nowadays doing this thing that we call offline detection. We go through our logs. We use machine learning-based log analysis. And we create an attack report. Sometimes what happens in, for example, Bing, is that we have some scripts that take 30 days to run through our data. Remember, we are talking about, you saw the numbers there. So we are talking about 100 terabytes to 200-300 terabytes per day. And sometimes you, to find an attack, you need to see the guy attacking for a few days. So sometimes we find after 30 days that, hey, that request 30 days ago was an attack. That's great, isn't it? It's good because in terms of if someone was paying an ad and that was clicked by this attacker, and they do this, people attack the ads from competitors and make their budget go down by clicking on ads. But if you uncover this after 30 days, it is bad because you give a refund to that advertiser, but maybe that campaign was time sensitive and kind of, you give them a refund, they are not happy anyway. Ideally, we would have real time or near real time protection. So ideally, the goal of everybody nowadays is to have what we call this web application firewall in front of your front end It will be something strange because it is in front of the front end. And what you want to do it is, you want to filter the requests, and if they are suspicious, you do something. And what you do, there are techniques. Indeed, I heard that there was a presentation here about techniques. But for example, the first request from a certain IP address, from a certain client that it is suspicious, you delay it for 1 millisecond. The second, you delay 10 milliseconds. And if the guy keeps attacking, after a while, you say, well, I will delay you 10 seconds. If it is an attacker, they will go away. If it is a customer, maybe after a while, you say, let me just show a page to see if you are a human. For example, you probably have seen these things. So machine learning is a strong candidate, and I believe that unless quantum computing make a huge run in the next few years, machine learning will be the buzzword of the decade, because everybody nowadays does machine learning. It is fantastic, because when I was working on Kinect for Windows doing hand gesture recognition, I talked with everybody, and everybody was doing machine learning. And it's like the person does a config file with a number that changes, machine learning. And a lot of people, when I ask them about machine learning, they say, how much you know about machine learning? They say, I know enough to be dangerous. And I say, wow, it's good you are not a surgeon or an airline pilot, isn't it? Because I would not enter your airplane if you knew enough to be dangerous. But even managers at Microsoft, they are managing teams, and how much you know about this? I know enough to be dangerous, and I'm, oh my goodness. The reality is, a lot of people think that, and that is another problem. People in companies, software companies and other companies, sometimes they have this thing of past results indicate future results. If the person succeeded in the past, they will succeed in the future. And they never read any book about business, about the Peterson principle and something. And then they find, oh, but this guy was successful in the past. They will be successful in the future. And I come originally from Brazil, and then I moved to the United States, but I still follow a lot of soccer, and I have a lot of friends from Germany. And they keep kind of now, after the World Cup, they keep kind of annoying me with showing some things like, but we predicted German would win. You can go to the site of this famous sports university and see our prediction model. And I look at this and said, what can I say? After 7-1, I cannot say anything. But basically, look at that. They really predicted it would win. Problem is, almost every single result is wrong there. But they just look at the end result and say, fantastic, we predicted Germany would win. It's like, lucky, there was a kind of octopus on the previous World Cup that was better. But the key thing is this. Machine learning, when I try to explain inside Microsoft to teams, what is that we should consider? The first thing is machine learning will use big data. And you just saw that the big data that I'm talking about is really big. And the first mistake that I see a lot of people doing, including teams in which I worked with, it is, oh, Allison, let's buy this machine that has 80 CPUs. And I say, do not do this. Do not do this. I need a machine with one CPU and a fast hard disk. No, we bought it already. I say, okay, I know how these things happen. Now you have to use it. I said, this doesn't make any sense. The machine will be constrained by the bandwidth of the access to the data. Oh, but you have good developers. You are a good developer. Try to use the machine. This is the best we could do with a machine with 80 CPUs. 40 cores sit down waiting. There is no way to get data to the cores at the speed they can process. So the first thing is, you need a model of how things will scale. Because you start, if you are doing only toy projects, projects that will work on the lab, that's fine. You can do it forever. But if you are doing projects that will go really to successful online sites, you need to think from the beginning how this thing will work when my website is like Facebook scale, or even before Facebook. There is another social network in the United States that is not as successful as Facebook, and I have friends there, but they make money, and they have 100 million requests from time to time. So you don't need to be Facebook scale to need to really be very big. So think about how the thing will scale. Second, think about the organizational expertise. You need to have experts on every area. Nowadays, a lot of the interpretation of the sentences that I see, it is fantastic. If I come here and say, do you know C sharp? Yes. Do you know C sharp? Yes. Do you know C sharp? Yes. The sentence that I can say is, the three people on the first line of a presentation during TechEd know C sharp. How marketing will say this is different. It's like, 100% of developers know C sharp. It's like, from a sample, 100% of the developers know C sharp. And again, this is a problem. You need data. And one of the reasons big data is now such a good keyword is that big data prevents you from the need of doing sampling. If you can process all the data, as I can, if I have computational power to process 100 terabytes every day, I don't need to sample. Perfect, isn't it? But the moment I need to sample, I'm in trouble. How do I sample this data? How do I sample? If I come here and I ask you, do you know English? Do you understand English? Yeah. Do you understand English? Again, 100% of the people understand English. So I cannot go from a sample to a universe if I don't know how the sample really represents the universe. It's very hard. So the only reason why these things with big data and machine learning are working in large companies is because in reality, we process all the data. We don't sample. So we see a lot of models, people doing modeling, and I'm using 0.1% of the data. Cool. It's like, if I do this thing in the United States and then I try to extrapolate to Japan and other countries, it doesn't work any longer. Experiments. You need to really do a lot of experiments. A lot of times what we try, fail. And I have a presentation on the internet you can find from Build 2013 about how we did in Kinect for Windows the recognition of hand opening and closing. And when I got the project, they said, oh, we trust you, you will succeed. And then I signed that I will work on that. And they say, by the way, the three previous teams that tried this failed. And then, okay, job security. Libraries. If you are implementing machine learning and you are not at Microsoft Research or some company doing libraries, forget it. You are doing something wrong. A lot of people that I talk with about machine learning, they say, Alison, what is the best method? SVM or decision forest or Bayes network or KNN? And I said, if you are thinking about this, your project started so wrong that I cannot even tell you. It's like you thinking about the brand of the tap on the kitchen when you are trying to build a house. You are thinking about something that really has very little influence in the success of the project or not. So you need to be using a library. You need to be using something that really will automate just low-level things. If you want to understand the methods, look at the books that I indicated. But if you want to succeed with your project, you shouldn't be implementing this. And why? Some people challenged me, and I have the time. They said, but no, people need to understand machine learning. I said, yes, they need to understand enough to be safe. And what you need to understand to be safe, I can show people in 3 minutes. And they keep saying it's impossible. And I'll show you in 3 minutes. What you need to understand from machine learning to be safe, you understand in 3 minutes. Let's try. So suppose I have data from, and this is from a real book, so you can look at this example later and see in the book with more depth. But suppose I have a bunch of data about movies. And these movies, someone went and labeled these movies as movies that are romance or action based on the number of kisses or the number of kicks during the movie, okay? This is supervised learning, as they call it. Now I have a new movie. What is this movie? Is it romance or action? So, the roles, lines, or whatever you call it, from A to F are what we call ground truth. This is data that someone told us that is true, okay? We will believe it. There are other problems that later you will, when you go deep in machine learning, you learn that there are problems about ground truth. But let's assume that's true. And now our time really starts. Just look at what happens when you show this data in a graph. What do you think will happen with the question mark? Which group do you think it will belong to? Clear to the group that is there, which is kind of the romance, isn't it? When you do it visually, it's very cool, isn't it? You really see it. But there is a mathematical way to do this. Let's go quickly over this because it's boring, and you can double check my mathematics later, and I guarantee you it's kind of correct. There is a way whereby I measure the distance in two dimensions from the new data point to all the other data points, considering the dimensions as the number of kicks and the number of kisses, okay? Again, boring mathematics, just follow it later. Then I sort this data by distance, okay? And the method that is known as KNN, the K nearest neighbors, just tells you, look at the K nearest neighbors, and you select the K, so let's select K as 3, and the K nearest neighbors, the 3 nearest neighbors are romance. That's it. That data point is a romance. The mathematics is simple, isn't it? Doesn't scale very well, because if I had to do this and I had billions of data points, it wouldn't scale very well. But there is another way to do this, and that is where the methods start. There is a way to called k-means, where I, instead of I doing all that calculation, I pre-calculate the groups. I kind of do a representation of my data in groups, and then I just measure the distance of the new data point to that group. That data is then represented by what we call the centroids of the groups. Just mathematics, you don't need to remember this, forget as soon as you go home. And then here is the calculation of how you calculate the distance of the first, this is the centroid of the first group, centroid of the second group, distance calculated, you see it's closer than the first group, body mathematics proven, okay? Now, there is another way. And then you, by the time you finish this way, it's over. You understood almost everything that happens in machine learning methods. It is called the BI approach. What if I pre-calculate what would be the classification of a data point here? And I do this for another data point here, another data point here, another data point here. Indeed, if you think about it, I can do this for the entire space, isn't it? And it ends up in a bunch of data points being pre-calculated as romance, other data points as actual movies, isn't it? It's even better. It gets even simpler. I can find a way to split this space by a certain line, or maybe it is a curve, that is exactly at the border, isn't it? And that's it. That is basically what they call the support vector machine technique. You find this line that is splitting the space apart as better as well as you can do it. And of course, usually you not have just two dimensions. You go to another dimensions, and this is a plane. And you can go to four dimensions, and I leave as an exercise to do the four dimensions kind of graph, because I only know how to do up to three dimensions. And basically, this is, and there is a very good presentation in the proceedings of the Tech Ed. Did you see the presentation of doing predictive methods with Azure ML? If you did, saw it, there is a very good presentation. I don't have time here to really explain Azure ML and this, but if you got that presentation, you can now see the video. That's it. Everything that I needed to explain in basically 3 minutes. So now we are left with a huge problem now. In these things that I've showed you, I knew exactly the features that I needed to collect in order to do my analysis, isn't it? I built a model for the movies because I've showed you if I count kicks and if I count kisses, I will be able to classify the movie. That, of course, in reality may or may not be true. There are parodies, there are other problems, but that model worked for this application. The problem is, if I have requests to websites, I have a huge problem because first, I need to do an entire feature engineering. I need to try a bunch of features, like, for example, the size of the request, the number of keywords in this request that I can recognize as JavaScript keywords, and then I need to label if those are attack or not. And you saw that I have a little bit of requests. I have some billions of requests, isn't it? So how do I do this? Because I have two problems. One, I need to do the feature engineering, and two, I need to, if I am to train a machine learning model, I need to have ground truth. So how do I get this? Well, did you remember that I told you we have our own attack service? That we attack ourselves, that we have a service that we created? So let's follow this diagram. This is exactly what we do in Bing. This I don't know, for example, if you would be able to do in most installations nowadays. So we have traffic coming from the web that may be good or bad traffic. And we have traffic from our attack serves. It's called WebSec. I will not talk in depth here about WebSec. If you are interested, let us know in the feedback and we can bring in the future people to talk about WebSec. But WebSec is our service that is attacking our endpoints all the time. We know those requests are attacks, and we know when we did those requests. So we can use that as ground truth, isn't it? All that we need now are requests that are good, because when you are training machine learning, you need good and bad examples. You cannot use only bad examples. And then we also have the user's data and the operational data. We have what is happening in all the million servers that we use, and we also have all the requests. We are using indeed an internal system that is a kind of implementation of the same technologies of HD Insight, but it's called Cosmos. I will not talk that much about Cosmos here, but the only advantage of Cosmos is, while there are some limits nowadays for HD Insight, I don't remember exactly, but for example, your cluster can have 64 machines at maximum, isn't it? With Cosmos, I can throw 100,000 machines at the problem easily. It's better in terms of scale. But basically, then we do our recognizer, and then we recognize our bad traffic. What we do with it then is exactly what we have told you. We can now analyze this. We do a lot of experiments. We kind of get this ground truth that we started with. We do some experiments and we train a machine learning model. Then we throw it into our solution. We have to prepare the features as they are coming from the requests exactly like we learned. We do the classification or regression that we want. But now we will make mistakes at the beginning. Until you have a perfect recognizer, you will make mistakes. So you will have to analyze your output, and we have ways to analyze the output. If it is a true positive, for example, if there was an attack and you detected it, everything is good. If it is a true negative, if there was no attack and you let it pass normally, perfect. But what if there is a false positive? That is a problem. There was something that you were thinking it is an attack, but it is not. So you have to keep training. You have to put that in your ground truth and train more. Same thing if there is a false negative, if there is an attack that is going through and you didn't recognize it. And that will happen at the beginning a lot of times. But the reality is, for us, this is less of a problem, the false negatives, than the false positives. And you'll see why quite soon. Now, let's think about deployment. Deployment is a challenge because, if you remember, I've showed you that we have indeed in Bing several services. And we are now partnering with Azure, we are partnering with Office 365 and everybody, and we want to use the knowledge that we acquire for all of our services. So the best way to do this is to have a kind of machine learning-based web application firewall here that reads the machine learning data that you are learning. And this data, there is a problem, because if you learn offline, you can take days to learn, and then you deploy a new module here, you want this data here to kind of be updated, but our services cannot stop. So again, I will not give you the details here, but it is just to show that you need to think a lot about deployment and a lot about scalability as you start, because you don't want to, let's stop Bing for a few seconds while we update the machine learning or anything. You need to be smart enough to be able to deploy machine learning kind of metadata with services still running. And then you get into this problem of what is normal traffic? This is the traffic of a certain online service that I will not tell you which one, within Microsoft. And it's an online service that I believe that for this audience, most of you have at least used it. So given a certain number of days, and this is traffic, I believe, for 85 or 90 days. This is really how the requests for sessions, this is not requests, this is sessions, happen per day. Can you see that it is very hard to know what is normal? Because it varies during the weeks, it varies during the day, but it also varies during the weeks. Why? Because you have weekends. And then the traffic also is slowly, there is a component here that you can see that is increasing. As in most web services and online services, your traffic is increasing a little bit over time, and you have all these other components. So you have to create a model that considers that, hey, there is a kind of thing that is happening with my service, it's going up or down in a certain curve, and there is this other component per week, and there is another component per day. Here, the component per day is averaged, because I'm showing per day, but if you want to really filter something, you have to filter it in an effective way, and this is what it will be typical. So the takeaway from this scenario here before we go to the overall conclusions is this. There is a way to detect attacks from your data. We have done this successfully for certain attacks. By the way, when I say attacks here, of course, you start with one kind of attack. Let's say, let's detect XSS, let's detect SQL injection. And then you kind of slowly add more attacks. So this is a work that can go on for a while until we have kind of found all the different types of attacks. And then your machine learning model will give you how much confidence it has that these requests or sessions or groups of events are attacks. And basically what you are seeking is to say, this here is not normal, okay? There is an issue here. And that's why you see that in my diagrams, I was focused more on users' data and not on operational data. The first thing is this. If you put a module in your machines, all your servers, to, for example, send to a central location counters like CPU utilization or network traffic as requests are coming, what happens with this module? It is influencing the traffic and the CPU utilization and everything. So the operational data is very, very hard to use in reality, because unless you have machines that are dedicated to you, the simple presence of your model to capture the data damages your data a lot. And we are learning this, and it's hard. False positives, and this is why I was telling you that at the beginning, having false negatives is better than having false positives. If I have 10 billion requests in a day, and I have 0.1% false positives, by the way, folks, having 0.1% false positives means what? 99.9% accuracy. Ask people that work with machine learning, what is the, if anybody has a 99.9% accuracy model. There was something at the kind of front page of the New York Times about some team recently that improved the state of art of object recognition by 100%. I believe it was not 96 something, but improved by 100%. Because there is this database of images full of cats, dogs, anything, and they improved the state of art by 100%. You know what happened? They went from something like 0.1. They went basically from being accurate 10% to 20%. That is improving the state of art in computer vision nowadays. So if you have a model that is 99.9% accurate, you will be creating 10 million incidents per day to investigate or to do something. Be very careful with this in the beginning. And as I said, the real-time correlation of usage data and operational data is very hard. Very, very hard, because this influences your models. So before we go into the overall conclusions, any questions? We have time, so. No questions? Okay. So, review. We have shown you how we use big data in Bing to find the attack surface of our web service. You have the code. You can kind of use that, find the attack surface for your own service, and then write models to attack it. So this not only helps you to find vulnerabilities, but it helps you easily to find usage patterns in your site, which is usually good. And as you anticipate vulnerabilities, you will go and fix those. Using machine learning is a little harder. It is something that we are doing ongoing on an ongoing basis. And one of the things that we are learning is that As I showed you in the k-means during the presentation, sometimes we cannot say if the request is malicious or not, but we can kind of group the requests and start to say, these requests, they look similar. If they are malicious or not, we will judge later. And this already can be very, very useful. And once you detect malicious intent, what do you do? As I said, what you are trying to do is always increase the cost for the attacker. If you start to delay the answer by 1 millisecond, 10 milliseconds, 100 milliseconds, that may be enough. Okay? And all that I told you here still doesn't mean that you shouldn't follow a security development model and that you should not have penetration testing. You should have penetration testing. You should have development following a security development lifecycle model. But the problem with these technologies is, as your investment goes, the return on investment starts to kind of decrease with time. After a while, you develop your code, and your penetration testers start to not find many new things, because they kind of found all the little and easy things to find, and the other things are hard. What we are telling you is, using big data and machine learning is some investment that you can do that follows a different curve. It will require a large investment on the beginning, and I can tell you, it will bring you no return at all. It will only increase cost for a while, and nothing comes on return. And I am really grateful for the teams that I worked at Microsoft that allowed me to do experiments until we started to be successful, because at the times I cannot believe these people are continuing to pay me. I don't really add anything to the bottom line yet. But then when you finally start to add to the bottom line, there are hiccups here and there. Someone changes something and you have to adapt. But it is amazing because basically you automate your work. For a class of problems, you solve that problem and your curve overall starts to be like that. You start to kind of, as time goes by, you still have cost. You still have to pay the salary of everybody. You still have to pay the machines to be there operating. But your return on investment is there. The simple fact that we nowadays can mostly say that unless someone makes a huge mistake, we hardly release a new version of Bing with vulnerabilities that are simple, like cross-site script and others. The simple fact that we can say that, it is an amazing return on investment. So most of the times, only when someone kind of, someone disabled the IP addresses from the WebSec. They don't accept our requests because they, of course, it's a large company. When you have a division with 3,000 people, when they see this traffic coming attacking, then sometimes they think we are an attacker and disable it. So these things happen. But other than this, we really are very confident. And finally, the thing that I really like to make an analogy with these technologies like machine learning and big data, as I just told you, that they require a large investment in the beginning before they start to give you return, is with a crane. That is this building that is being built in front of where I work. And they have this crane. And of course, renting those cranes and putting them there costs money, isn't it? It's really something. Plus, if there is a profession that I will never have in my life, I can guarantee you, is being the guy that works here. Have you ever gone to the top of the crane and really looked down? And it's like, I recommend you to do this. Because it's liberating. You say, whatever I work with, probably is better. Our primal fear of height. But it is fantastic because when I see the speed they can develop with this crane, and the building nowadays is like this, it's unbelievable. The fact that they had this crane in front of us, and they could kind of put things so much faster after they made this investment. Big data and machine learning is exactly like this. It is a tool. And if the tool works well, in the end, nobody will see the crane there, isn't it? The beauty of our work is when it's done well, disappear. When there is a security vulnerability, everybody remembers there is a security team, isn't it? But most of the time, why do we need the security team again? It's like, no. But there is no problem. Oh, security team, why didn't you find it? So select a problem, select your library and tools, prepare your data, and keep evolving your model. Machine learning is like a crane, and I hope this presentation gives you the kind of end-to-end scenario that it is something that is being used. Big data and machine learning is practical nowadays. There are companies like us using it and other companies, and you should be using this in your service also. So that's it. Any questions? Okay, we can end earlier also. Thank you.